On today's College Football Inquirer, the Big 12 approves college sports first private equity deal with a league, plus an update on the CSC participation agreement / blood pact involving Nebraska. And if you have 9 draft picks, shouldn't you have won a lot of games last year? We examine the Clemson situation. All on today's College Football Inquirer. Welcome to the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. Ross is on the road because he's moving and shaking. He's making deals, but not the kind of deals that the Big 12's making. We got a private equity deal, sort of. I want you to explain, Ross, because a league has now made a deal with a private equity company, though it's not exactly a PE deal yet. So let's explain.
So there, I think the easiest way, and I think we talked about this in December when it sort of the details first came out, but it's kind of like a 3-part deal, right? The first part is the league office gets at least $12.5 million. They can get as much as like $25 million, I think, to invest in companies, in try to make more money, revenue generating opportunities, whatever. So there's that. And they're getting that money from the capital companies, from Redbird and Weatherford. And then the second part of the deal is just
let me point this out. Weatherford, if you're a college football fan and that name sounds familiar to you.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, didn't a guy named Drew Weatherford play quarterback at Florida State? This is one of the people involved.
He leads the, he leads the company. He leads this college athletic solution sort of part of the company that's part of all this. So the second bucket is sort of just a strategic long-term relationship and partnership with Redbird to sort of monetize some of their partners and their assets and all that stuff, kind of the boring part. And then the third bucket is probably the most interesting part and the one with maybe more questions around it, which is each of the 16 Big 12 schools get an option. An option, not required, an option to take upwards of a one-time payment of upwards of $30 million, $30 million in capital. So that's kind of how it breaks down. The question that I'm getting most certainly, and it's fair, and I addressed it briefly in the story, is how many schools will actually take this? And there seems to be the range of 2 to 5 is sort of the range
I
hear.
So it's not like the Big Ten where they had the deal they were working on that USC and Michigan said no to, where everybody else was in.
That's right. Yeah, this is an option. And, I think that it being structured this way is intentionally, obviously, to make sure that it has the support. Because I think if you required everybody to take the money, there's a good portion of the league that wouldn't take the money, doesn't want the money in there.
Texas, like, we have our own billionaire. Thank you.
Yeah. You can imagine the ones that aren't going to take the money, right? Texas Tech, Utah is doing their own private equity deal. Their deal is actual equity. This is more of a capital deal, but that deal is like an actual private equity deal. Well, you can imagine like Arizona State, I'm sure, doesn't really need it, right? There's certain Baylor probably wouldn't take it.
Can I ask you a question, Ross? Because like Redbird, Weatherford, they're not doing this out of the kindness of their hearts. They're doing this to make money. So if you take $30 million, how do you pay them back? How does that work?
That's a good question. Well, you pay them back. Most of if schools take the money and the portion that schools are going to have to pay back and the portion the Big 12 office is going to have to pay back is almost certainly going to come from the new TV contract, right? They're banking.
So that is equity in a way. It's not
in a way.
You're not taking out a loan with 10% interest and you have an APR. Like, it is equity.
Yeah. Yeah. The thought is that you're going to end up paying that back through whatever you get from the new TV contract.
But
it's all sort of built around that. Yeah.
So why are we doing this?
Yes. Of course. Of course.
What's the point?
Fast nickel beats a slow dime, Godfrey.
You're borrowing against projected future earnings, right? And none of this is going to close the gap in the Power Four? So why would you take this deal?
Because you want to hit the pawn shop, the expensive pawn shop.
But there is no path forward that would, like, taking this deal would not ensure success, albeit maybe in the most limited way for a short-term gain. Like, this is the dumbest path possible. So why are we doing
that? Now you're thinking like an athletic director who isn't going to have a job in 3 years. So,
and also, if two to five, you said schools are going to take this
that's sort of the suggestion, which speaks to your point. I mean, I think schools could do this in other ways. We could find money in other ways that are probably cheaper, and that's why you're not seeing as many that may do it. We don't know. Maybe it could be zero. I mean, nobody.
If I'm a fan of one of these 2 to 5 schools, what am I going to get? Like, what? How is this? How is this going to affect the product that I pay for and I care about? Just the football part. Like, I'm a football fan. Let's just say I'm West Virginia and I take this. Okay.
I think the immediate is I would. So this is a one-time $30 million. First of all, the deal is 5 years with Redbird. This is a one-time $30 million payment. I mean, I could see, again, I'm just like throwing stuff against the wall here. I mean, you could see them taking the $30 million and at least over the next 2 years, say, splitting it $15 million and $15 million and spending that on football and men's basketball to get competitive over the next 2 to 3 years before, guys, as we've talked about plenty, there's some kind of other breakaway or separation. So everybody's trying in the short term to get really, really good for this. So whatever is good,
it's essentially take on massive debt to try to get yourself in the club.
So the news is the news here today in the segment is that a private entity, PE, is offering a payday loan that is not large enough for you to relatively compete in the long term, but might help you make a little bit of a splash, but still doesn't add up to any, like, the kind of budgets that we're seeing in the Big Two. That's what we're saying.
Yes, that's basically right. One of the things I think, to me, the most interesting part of the deal isn't the money. It's actually the relationship that Redbird has with some very big TV partners in the college sports space, TNT or TNT soon, when CBS buys and Paramount buys or merges, whatever they're doing.
Warner Brothers,
Redbird, who's the capital partner here with the Big 12, owns Paramount, or has a second biggest share. Is the second biggest shareholder of Paramount. So the idea here, talking to people in the league, the idea here is that potentially when the Big 12's TV deal comes up in 2031, that they will be in a position with this deal to potentially, you know, land some TV partners they don't have now, which would be CBS.
Why? Because their members are in hock.
Because they owe money to somebody.
Ross, when they say this stuff to you, does it sound as dumb? Does it sound as stupid when they say it to you off the record as it sounds like?
Hey, it's a business. They're in business relationships now, so they're hoping that would.
No,
turn
they're
into
not. They have a payday lender. This is a payday loan. This is the same thing that if I were to go down the corner here in Tennessee and get 320% against my next paycheck, so I could cover some groceries and bills. That's what we're doing here.
Well, you're right. Right here, Godfrey, I will be the loan holder, and you can be the Big 12 the next time the TV rights come up.
Yeah.
Hey, Big 12, it sure would be a shame if you didn't do your rights deal with Paramount.
Yeah, at a reduced rate, by the way. This actually hinders your marketability.
Yeah, sure would be a shame. You wouldn't want to have a break-in or a fire or anything.
So, Ross, when these guys call you and they're just like, hey, we've got breaking news for you. We're huge dumbasses. Does that ever, like, when your sources call you and you're like, hey, guess what body part I just stuck in the wood chipper? You'll never
That's
believe
not what
it.
They say.
But I was able
2 weeks ago, by the way. So,
oh, great.
Is that not what they say?
Extra hard.
They say they're innovators, or are they disruptors on this one?
Mm.
Oh, we're talking about payday loans. This segment is about payday loans.
Free. Nothing is free. There is no such thing as free money. So,
nope. God. This is not free. It will be. There's an expected return, as I noted in the story. There is an expected return. But, the response to this story was a couple of, like, from the other college industry people were, Godfrey's response for sure is, right. Why would you take this money?
It wasn't working. Can I get the street, some of that?
You go down the street and get it for 3%, or you go to a booster and get it for like 1% or whatever, now that's the one reaction. Second reaction is, of course, how many schools, are going to do this? And the third reaction is, what is the Big 12 doing with $12.5 million or up to $25 million? And we don't know that exactly, but I guess
you mentioned they got to pay a management fee. My thought initially was, oh, a lot of these schools are going to take this, and the capital partners are going to make so much money that they essentially gave the Big 12 a finder's fee for finding them some suckers. But that doesn't seem to be what happened.
No, the Big 12's got to pay them. This is like, I think you guys remember when the Big 10 was talking about doing their deal, they had a cut of the money was going to Big Ten enterprises, right? They were starting this new entity, private sort of entity, to handle a lot of the conferences in this evolution of more professionalized concept. They were going to, there was a cut of it that would go to the league. I don't know if that's similar, but it is different. Yeah. Big 12 is not creating Big 12 enterprises or whatever. But I think the thought is to put this money into other places that makes more money from the conference level. I mean, that's the thought, obviously.
What's different with the Big Ten one, because I got people asking me that, like, why, how is this different from the Big Ten?
It is a lot different.
And here's why the Big Ten one fell apart. The Big Ten was creating something where the partner was going to get a piece of the Big Ten's future revenue generating.
Yeah, that
capacity.
Was equity. Absolute
right,
equity.
Right. Like which is why Michigan and USC say we don't want to do this, you really can't do it. Because you would be selling something that they partially own. And in this case, each school is entitled to do what it wants. You're not taking, like, a school that doesn't participate, you're not taking something they own and then trying to sign it to somebody else.
Cash and checks at liquor stores.
That's right.
This is where we're at.
The payday loan is the best analogy, Godfrey.
That's how many really people compare in the industry would say the same thing. I mean, that's what a lot of people said about the Big Ten deal. Obviously, the money was a lot more in the Big Ten, right? It was when $30 million, right? It was a one-time payment of the average $150 million.
We're going to end up with a couple of these schools legitimately out of business or in a gross amount of debt and or owned by one of these firms before we can sit down and finally say, athletes are employees and we need to negotiate wages and caps and something that's functional, as well as distribute the actual membership from a super league to a middle league on. Because
Godfrey, I used to work in the newspaper industry, and I can assure you that private equity folks have never, ever run a business into the ground. So don't worry about it. It's going to be fine.
Ross, were they excited when they told you this?
Depends
on these are the authority figures. These are the people that I'm told all the time, like, oh, I don't understand how hard it is to do this job. I just want to know how excited they were that they had just purchased Magic Beans.
Yeah.
I'm gonna start going to some of these events and slapping people, and I have a big.
There was noted excitement from many people, but there was also many people that has said to me that are at schools, in Big 12 schools, that have said pretty flatly, no, we're not taking this, and we haven't
thought
even seriously
about taking it. Someone who used to have a Sports Illustrated corporate card, spending someone else's money is amazing. Feels so good.
The smartest thing you could do, the way you hack this, is that you get into the AD's meeting in the conference level, and you encourage every one of your peers to take this money, and you don't. That's the smartest thing you can do right now.
Well, the funny thing is, people have mentioned to me that they thought either zero will take the money or like five. Because if one takes it, then it'd be like, well, wait a second. We compete against this team. They just have $30 million more dollars than we do. We got to take it. So it's like, it's either going to be zero or five or, something like that.
Has this week not taught us the lesson that $30 million can be spent very foolishly, very quickly, and might not actually help you.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is
like you can buy a quarterback for like $5 or $6 million and then he doesn't even play.
Yep.
Good job, guys.
Yep. This is where we are.
I look forward to the same people standing in front of microphones in August and talking about the crisis because we have to pay players. I look forward to these decision makers, these champions of industry, these intellectual thought leaders telling us what's wrong with the industry.
Hey, guys, they work in higher education. It's a not-for-profit, or I can't even say. By the way, I'm sorry.
This won't be the last one. This won't be the last one on the conference level. It won't be the last one at all, right? We know we talked about Utah doing their private equity deal.
Michigan State's done massive debt.
Florida State. Michigan State did some. We've got two schools that have done it publicly: Utah and kind of Michigan State, and then. We've got this, the conference, and I think, you know, all other conferences are sort of looking at the idea, and certainly a lot of schools are looking at the idea. And yeah, one maybe noteworthy, as it Andy just mentioned, is certainly Florida State. I think we're going to see more people do this, and not just to catch up and spend now like on a roster, but perhaps maybe afford an exit fee so they can move conferences. There's that too.
There is that.
Move to where? Where do you think you're going?
To the club.
Where do you think you're going?
To the club. To the club, Godfrey, to the club. There might be some ACC schools that would love to use PE money to maybe try to buy into the club. And I would guess that
this level
eventually.
Of disingenuousness that is incorporated into selling these middle two conference schools the dream reminds me of the scene in Big Short where like they're offering adjustable rate like home loans to immigrant families in America, and like they don't understand that the APR, you know, they don't understand that they're all subprime mortgages, and the juice is going to explode.
I passed
on them.
Out after the Margot Robbie bathtub scene.
This entire sport has been living the first 30 minutes of The Big Short for the last like 5 years.
Well, that's it. It did,
and they really are.
Your story
y'all.
Initially, Ross, it did sound like a HELOC, like a home equity line of credit. Which, for those who don't know, the interest rates on those, they just kind of go with the market, and so you could set it up at a time when it's not so bad, and then when you actually borrow the money, you're like, oh God.
To go back to the how the money is going to be spent if these schools do take it,
stupidly.
You know, is obviously it's going to be spent on the rosters, and
stupidly.
Right now it can be spent on the rosters because the CSC right isn't enforcing something, which leads into our next topic, Andy, which is the College Sports Commission.
You stole the transition from me.
I know.
You stole the segue. That's beautiful, though.
I know. The College Sports Commission's participant agreement, which we've talked on the pod about a few times. It's been 11 months of trying to get all the power conferences to basically sign away their legal rights to sue the CSC through this document called the participant agreement. And people in the industry say, if we don't sign the participant agreement, the settlement is worthless because the College Sports Commission cannot enforce because we'll keep suing them. And I've got an update today on the participant agreement. Big surprise. It's not been signed. The latest version, the Big 12 says they are about to sign it. And they're all on board. They've given whatever they've raised their paddles, all of them. The ACC is one or two short, I believe. One school down in South Florida is hesitant, I think, to sign. The SEC has pretty wide support for it too, but there's one school, especially in Knoxville, that certainly has a problem with it. And the Big Ten has plenty of issues with it. And they have one university that's in the middle of arbitration right now with the CSC, so they don't plan on signing anytime soon. So this is where we are. But there's
with
a thought.
With the Big 12 saying yes, does this mean the Texas Attorney General has backed off?
Yeah. Yes, correct.
Okay.
It is. It does mean that. And that is an important point. A thought is that the Big 12 can sign. The ACC will convince Miami and maybe a couple of his other private schools that have issues. Private schools have a little more issue with this than publics to sign.
Because an attorney general is not going to bail out a private school.
Correct.
By suing on their behalf. Yeah.
Right. And then they could try to pressure the SEC and specifically Tennessee to come along. And then if you have the three of them, can they then go to the Big Ten and say, you got to sign or else,
Let me answer
That's
this for
the
you.
Theory.
That's yeah, the let me theory. Answer this for you. No.
No.
They can't.
Yeah. Okay. There's a lot of hurdles left for that to happen.
Can we take this back to the main consumer, the person listening to this who's not in the industry, and explain what the relevance is here? Because we're jargoning the hell out of this.
Well, if the College Sports Commission can't enforce anything, then there's no NIL go, and it's a completely uncapped
There's no salary
market.
Cap, which there's none now. So it'd be... Like it so is no, now.
Okay.
There's at least a firewall now you have to go through, right? I mean, which is falling apart. We all know about the arbitration, the Nebraska arbitration, which, by the way, that happened on, what's today? On Tuesday, the Nebraska arbitration against the CSC happened. It went almost 8 hours. It was really, really long. And I believe there will be a post-hearing briefing, which extends the decision timeline for the arbitrator. So we could be more than a week away from any
and
kind of decision
loses,
there,
And if Nebraska loses, Nebraska's attorney general will jump in, sue the CSC. The whole thing will get blown up.
I'm going to go back to Godfrey's point because it is important. Like for Joe Fan, that's like, what the hell are you guys talking about? Your team is spending $25, $30, $35 million in their football roster. And you know, if the participant agreement doesn't get signed and if the CSC loses this arbitration in other cases, then your football team, instead of spending $30 million, can literally spend $130 million, right? So
cool.
The amount's going to keep on going up if there's no enforcement.
Nick Saban had an interesting comment on the Feinbaum show on Wednesday. And he's saying, you got to do something because it's not fair to have schools that can spend $40 million playing at schools that can spend $5 million, to which I thought, you know what wasn't fair? Having a school that has 20 former five-star recruits on its roster playing a school that has zero former five-star recruits on its roster, which pretty much describes every Alabama game from 2008 until 2023. Allow me to channel former College Football Inquirer, College Football Inquirer founding father, Dan Wetzel. Are we sure this is actually a problem? Because it seems like the sport is actually more fair now with uncapped spending.
I don't know, man. Every time I look at Josh Pate on social, he's telling me about how terrible things are. I mean, apparently the sport's dying. I'm looking at Pate stuff right now. I got to text him later and figure out what we're all going to do because there's not going to be college football anymore.
Are we sure? Because it sure seems to me like Indiana just won the freaking national title and there's like... 20 teams that could win it this year.
Yeah, apparently it's terrible, though. This is awful. This morning, one of the Alabama press corps, I guess, transcribed what Saban said on Feinbaum. Shocking, Nick Saban was on Feinbaum yesterday. I forget. I don't know what team he's coaching for right now. And he is upset that there is not. Let's just go ahead and say this, guys. This is breaking news. He calls for an equilibrium amongst college football team spending. This is Mike Rodak who transcribed this. One team should not have a $40 million roster and another team have a $5 million roster, and they're out there playing each other. Guys, do you know how many times the University of Alabama played the Louisiana Monroe in football?
I think it's three. And they
probably
lost
once a year. Okay. It almost seemed like it.
Could this be the most disingenuous quote I've ever seen from Nick Saban? That's really saying
something.
That's
why I said that. Like, how many times did Alabama play a game where they had 20 to 25 to 30 former five-star recruits on their roster playing as a team that had zero?
Well, he's just a good recruiter, Andy. The culture was so great in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, I know. I get it. It felt like it was a family atmosphere. I know.
But why is he always in the, like, we got to, I'll call Jimmy and ask. Like,
he was a really good coach and people are interested to hear what he has to say. I get that part.
But yeah, he was a really good coach of a sport that doesn't exist anymore,
but
either.
Listen, if
his methodology
was more
inapplicable.
If you think it was more fair in 2015, you're just stupid and there's no hope for you. It is more fair now.
I have never seen, I wrote and produced a miniseries called Who Killed College Football, which was a tongue-in-cheek title to talk about how, I'll spoil the whole damn thing. If you want to go listen to it, great. It's 7 hours long. The whole point of that was that college football has never been static. It has always been in a series. It has always undergone seismic change at every phase in every decade. And I know everyone thinks that the sport was one static thing, and then we paid players and everything went to hell. Because that's what I'm seeing from all of our colleagues right now about how terrible everything is and how awful this sport has become. But they didn't have that energy when Jimbo Fisher had a dead money contract at A&M, or we weren't paying the kids, or all this horrible stuff was happening at Baylor and Penn State. But everything is wrong now, okay? Everything is terrible now. And I'm having a really hard time, Andy, understanding why the sport, the football part, the football thing that we just saw last year, I had a good time. America had a good time.
The older generation that is being phased out of it, that have made a ton of money off the old rules, it's almost as if they're scared that they won't make as much money now. But they are going to make as much money.
You're
you
absolutely
have to share some of it.
You're absolutely right. But I'd say what's not necessary is people our age, millennial, like even like there's millennial age media carrying water and dabbling in nostalgia poison about what can't ever happen again.
If you cannot recognize that the sport is much more fair now than it used to be, you're being intentionally obtuse. Like you're a complete moron. It's one of those two. Yeah.
If I was some peckerhead on an Alabama message board, I would be pretty mad about the state of college football in 2026 versus 2016.
Because the one school it didn't work for.
Did you see Kirby's quote on whatever golf course they were playing at yesterday where he said, look, if you take those old Alabama teams, the ones where he was the defensive coordinator, he said they would beat any team today. And he's absolutely right. But guess what?
Stockpiling.
That's a good thing. It's a good thing now that there's that there's a little bit of parity in the sport.
Yeah, the big brands who dominated, you know, the last 15 to 20 years before the NIL era are not happy with the current state of the sport. And, you know, it's pretty obvious why, because they can't stockpile like they used to. And the talent's just more spread out, which is good for, it's probably not good for the group of six. It's probably not good for necessarily the very bottom of like the Big 12 and ACC, but it's good for the other 50 to 60 power schools.
That's a lot
more. It levels the playing field. Yes, it's level. Well, how many teams, especially given Indiana's championship, right? Mm-hmm. This question everybody always asks, like, how many teams are capable of winning it all right now? That number is way higher than it was 5 years ago, right?
Correct.
I mean, right now it might be 15 to 20. Back then it was literally like 6 to 8.
Oh, no. Right? It was like 3 in a lot of years. So
if you cheer for Arkansas right now, you should be over the moon at the state of college football. If you cheer for Purdue, Kentucky, South Carolina, Mississippi State, on like more people have access to this. Now, granted, there is a sort of a little bit of a change on the way in terms of the overall membership structure that was probably overdue. And spoiler alert, it's going to be unfair when it happens. But there are more brands now that have access to playing for the sport's biggest crown than we've ever seen before. So be very careful who tells you that the sky is falling.
Now, an abundance of talent does not necessarily guarantee you're going to win. We'll talk about that when we come back. But first, I got to tell you about Yahoo Sports Formula One coverage. Check out Yahoo Sports coverage of the Miami Grand Prix starting this weekend. You can watch F1 practice and qualifying coverage for free on yahoosports.com and the Yahoo Sports app. Free practice one begins at noon Eastern time on Friday, May 1st, while qualifying takes place at 4 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, May 2nd. The Miami Grand Prix will stream on Apple TV at 4 p.m. on Sunday. Check it all out at yahoosports.com/racing. We'll be right back. Welcome back to College Football Inquirer. And we just got done talking about what Nick Saban said about parity and Then I pointed out that his teams were significantly more talented than most of the teams they played. That does not guarantee success. And I wonder how that works in a situation where, let's say you have 9 players drafted off your team, but your team won 7 games and was objectively not good and was thought to be a national title type contender at the beginning of the season. And that is where Clemson is. 9 draft picks, all in the first 5 rounds, by the way. So these weren't just NFL players. These were people the NFL really liked. You had 2 first rounders, couple, you know, you had, I believe, 2 second rounders. Like, they had good players on this team. This team seriously underachieved. And you think Dabo Swinney, who brought Clemson 2 national titles, who took Clemson from, you know, kind of an also-ran, like a pretty good ACC program to a nationally elite program, you'd think he'd be bulletproof. Godfrey, I'm not so sure he is anymore.
I totally agree. I'm trying to do something unique with the segment. Do you think most people think he's still bulletproof?
If I were Graham Neff, their AD,
yeah,
I would have to look around the sport at what happened to James Franklin, what happened to Jimbo Fisher, what happened to Mark Stoops, and go, my peers seem to think that this is not an absolute situation just because of the buyout.
Yes. What's the closest comparison to what Dabo's done at Clemson? I mean, 15, 18 years put them sort of on the map, won multiple championships, and now is declining. Like, I'm trying to think of somebody who...
Bobby Bowden, all the ones you just mentioned.
Bobby was the one I was thinking of, but he had been there so much more, like, so much longer,
and
I guess.
And the decline had been longer. It had been almost 10 years of decline.
But
when
Bobby's
they finally
the one
did.
I had originally came to my mind.
You could say...
Oh, you know what? Go ahead. No, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you could say he's kind of speed running the Bowden existence, where... Not to say that Clemson was nothing, but it certainly wasn't national title caliber in the modern era. He made it that way. He did it through a very sort of signature system, and then it fell apart.
Frank Beamer.
No titles,
that's
though.
Probably a good one.
Yeah, no titles.
Yeah, no titles. But close.
Frank went into the sunset a lot more amicably than I think Dabo's gonna.
And the difference is, especially with given, like, I don't know, you guys, like, we've talked to James Franklin and we've covered that story a little bit. Like, Virginia Tech, and James Franklin said it when I had him on my On Three show. He basically said, like, Brent Pry and Justin Fuente were not given the resources they needed to win. And so I think Frank Beamer was probably in that boat too.
Oh, Dabo Sweeney.
Yeah, and Beamer was there a lot longer too. You know,
Dabo Sweeney can't say that. Like, Clemson is doing all of the things you need to do to compete for national titles, and I think that's the issue.
It's Gundy-esque. It's Mike Gundy-esque, except that Dabo has actually shown a full proof of concept in that he's won 2
Gundy
national
is
titles.
Probably the best example. He didn't have titles. I mean, he didn't have a championship either, but that's a really
good
example, too.
He's the best coach in school history,
That's a good example. Yeah.
The biggest thing here is that whatever happens this year, and I think I would be betting on a change more than I would be betting on consistency or a Clemson resurgence. I don't see how this ends. They're not going to corner office Dabo Swinney. Like, Dabo Swinney's going to, like, it's not going to end well. It's not going to be similar to the Frank Beamer. You guys remember when Frank stepped down, he went to Whit Babcock, the AD at the time, and basically said, I think it was like still September, and said, hey, this is the plan. This is my decision. I want you to have this lead time so you can start organizing a search to make the transition as seamless as possible. This is going to be a fight. This is going to be a bitter change. And the next head coach at Clemson, if that's in 2027, is going to be starting from scratch. Because the assets, the institute at Clemson football is signature to Dabo. And I think he'll try and take it with him. I definitely think he'll try and coach again.
I would agree. Now, he still could pull out of this. And I will say the rhetoric from Dabo Swinney has changed considerably over the past year.
Well, he's still coaching and they're paying players, so I'd say so.
Well, there's that, but he's also the one who said he's already said now he thinks they should be employees. Like, he's gone completely the other direction. And
yes,
saw the light.
Well, a lot of people
also
have, right?
But he's also very much said this is my fault. This was my fault. Like, and it's, you know, because a lot of coaches say that. He hadn't really been saying that. He's, because the way he would respond to the questions over the last few years was, look at all I've done for you. How can you be mm-hmm. ungrateful? I'm saying it in not so many words. I'm translating.
Yeah.
His rhetoric has changed to, this is my fault. I have to do better.
It was the week three press conference last year, I think, that we did a segment on where it was like, hey, I see him in the back of the room. I'll walk out right now. It was very, very standoffish.
Yes.
This is how I somehow gamed out him being the next head coach at Baylor, but I can't remember how I did that a couple weeks
well,
ago.
Well, and that actually makes sense. Like, that's a logical, reasonable thing. I remember when Florida's job was open, I was speaking to one of the, like a quarterback club type group, and somebody said, well, why not Dabo Swinney? I said, is not the goal to win in this new era of college football? And they said, well, yes. And I said, has he? And they were like, oh. It was like, I hadn't even thought of that. Like, because I don't think teams that would want to compete for national titles, like, if this doesn't work, if something happens, if it all goes bad there, I don't think teams that want to compete for national titles would be interested.
I'm not, as much as I criticize Nick Saban as a media pundit, you gotta tip your hat to a man who saw the exact moment he should step down and took it.
Mm.
Whereas
Dan really knew exactly, like, he can criticize
it's as
this
impressive
moment all he
as
wants.
any retirement we've ever seen
coming.
In college coaching. Yeah.
So this is just,
I don't know if Dabo will do that.
It's a strange deal. Yeah. But I do think he understands what has happened now. And you cannot, like, again, very smart to now shift the blame to yourself, because you cannot have that draft haul and then turn back and say it's the system or it's the this or it's the that. You had good enough players. Everybody else who had the same number or more drafted got in the playoff last year.
Andy, can we turn this around real fast before we get off this segment? Wisconsin Badgers. How'd I do up there? You guys tell me, okay? Did I hit the Badgers right? You got to flatten out everything, okay? Our beloved Badgers had zero NFL draft picks, which is so strange because it feels like Wisconsin just sort of grows offensive linemen out of the ground that go on to have seven-year NFL careers. So I would posit then, as a, I guess I kind of have to just stay on my Luke Fickle apology tour and just kind of still ride with this, that in the NIL era, there, I think if we're going to say Dabo Swinney is effectively, emphatically underachieving based off of the NFL's evaluation of his roster, so too can we not look at coaches we know are good who are not achieving because there is no effective NIL apparatus on those campuses. Wisconsin very publicly said last year, we're not firing this guy. We have not played the game correctly when it comes to personnel acquisition.
Right.
So I'm curious, like, it's not, I keep saying this, I've said this for however many years he's been in Madison. Luke Fickle has not forgotten how to coach football. Luke Fickle took Cincinnati to a 4-team college football playoff, put Sauce Gardner, Desmond Ridder, and a host of other players in the NFL. I think as much as we evaluate Dabo in one direction, we would also have to create some context around current losing coaches who just don't have the talent.
Yes, I agree with that. And I think it goes both ways. I think if you look at the SEC this past year, you have examples of coaches that had talent that didn't succeed with it, and they got fired. Brian Kelly and Billy Napier, I think they both, their teams both had seven players drafted. And they got fired.
I can't think of a lot of examples of this. Fickle just stands out. I also thought it was really strange that Wisconsin had no draft picks.
Well, Mike Norvell, I think that's they had one player drafted.
Wisconsin broke a streak, right? It was like they had a person drafted since the 70s, maybe late 70s. Yeah. I think every draft in this breaks a streak. I mean, I think, you know, what we saw last year, especially with the firing, is that, you know, you could spend all the money you want, keep coming back to it. There's more to it, you know? So we talk about money on this show, and everybody talks about money and being outspent. I mean, there's plenty of situations where we could point to say, well, you know, it doesn't mean everything.
No, you spend it wisely. Okay, so Kurt Cignetti was on my show last week, and he said, because we asked him about responding to the guy on Twitter about how much his roster cost, and he said, it's closer to last year's roster, the one that won the national title, was closer to $15 million than it was to $40 million. If you want to do the math on that, the midpoint of those numbers is $27.5 million. Based on like Pete Nakos, who understands this market better than almost anybody, like he reported around the time of the national title game that Indiana spent in the low $20 millions on that roster, which tracks with what Kurt Cignetti said. You don't have to spend the most. You just have to spend it the most wisely.
Yes. That's just good GMing. Yep.
And then you got to coach him right. Then you got to coach him up right, too.
There was a little bit of an advantage with them, too, though, because remember how many players, what is it, 20 or 22 or whatever that he brought over from JMU that probably weren't, think about it, they weren't hardly getting paid at all at JMU. Right. And so giving them, you know, taking them from the floor, it definitely keeps your, you know.
In 2024, I guarantee you Elijah Surratt had people who were willing to pay him lots of money had he left Indiana. Yeah.
Of course, I'm not sure I believe any of these numbers. I wish there was a database where they were transparent and could log their numbers and everybody could see them because it's hard. It's hard.
It's interesting it's funny because you guys know the NFL doesn't have to reveal anything, and they don't actually on the record reveal anything. None of the NFL teams say we're paying this guy this. Every one of them says off the record exactly what they're paying somebody. And that's how you have Spotrac and all those things.
And I'm not sure that happens in college.
It doesn't happen at all in college. And the schools are stupid for that. You are. I'll tell you. And I realize I've called a lot of people stupid today. You're stupid for this. You're costing yourselves money by not allowing the market to define itself. There's reason the NFL teams do this.
Yeah. I mean, Andy, there's folks starting, kind of like folks have come along to like the employment debate and have switched sides and now are supporting it. There's a lot of ADs and coaches that have sort of come around to, hey, we just need a database that we can be public and be transparent. Now, they say that as they are going down to the state house and arguing to have a law to prevent their rev share contracts from being made public.
Not a single NFL team has ever put out a press release and said, we just signed this guy for this much money.
Right. Right.
But they've all said, hey, Ian Rappaport, hey, Adam Schefter, no matter what the agent told you, the last 2 years of that contract are phantom. Here's the guarantee. This is what we're actually paying the guy.
Well, in the teams, right, confirm it. Wait, agent, then the teams probably aren't. I feel like in college, the schools don't want to talk about that at all. They don't want to confirm anything. They don't want to talk about it. Right. The agent. So you're getting one side. Like 80% of the 80% of this is going to be coming from the agent side, which is it's hard to believe a lot of it.
Yeah. And if you would like to change, like, because this is a truly open market. But if you would like to lower how much you may have to pay a quarterback next year in the transfer portal, tell everybody what you're paying your quarterback this year. Because when the agents come out and say, well, I got my guy $6.5 million last year and he only actually got $4 million. Well, that's on you because you didn't get that information out there.
That's the biggest difference in the NFL is that teams will confirm things. I think they're okay with being transparent with reporters, even if it's like on background. It's just not the case with schools. We're getting closer to that. Like some schools are a little better at, okay, giving the thumbs up. Yes, that's right. But it's hard right now. And that is a big issue, Andy.
The difference is in the context though, right? Remember what Andy just said is like, teams are going to confirm on background, Ross, because there is a concerted, there's a bit of collusion amongst 32 businesses.
Yeah, it is 100%
collusion. Yeah.
It's beneficial to all 32 businesses to keep these figures within reason. In other words, you don't want it to be unconfirmed and then an erroneous report that a running back was paid more than market value, because the next free agent cycle, that's going to hurt the teams from the demands of the players. Mm-hmm. College hasn't figured that part out
but,
yet.
But the thing is, it's not actually collusion because, or it's not illegal collusion because all it is true information. All it is passing along true information.
The problem in college is everybody still thinks that they have a way to game a system that doesn't really exist yet.
This is also an environment of people who will put out a press release saying how much they're paying a coach because they think that is
a sign of commitment.
Chest thump that means something.
Yes.
Like, which is fun because now we get to track all that dead money when they fire the coach and then they complain about not having any cash.
And do they give it? They give it away because they have to in that situation because it's a public entity in a state records law. But they turn that into a way to turn it into a booster moment. But they don't understand, like, people thinking you paid your quarterback more than they did does not help you. It does not signify your commitment to winning.
The other part about boasting on the agent contract, I mean, that's also agents. The agents that we deal with at this level are more coach-centric, right? We deal with coaching agents. They have all the power levers. And they want it out there that all their coaches are uber rich, right? That this is how much they're trying to recruit other coaches to their agencies. That's why they call us. It's not because they're so nice to us and they think we're great people. It's because they call us and push that information so we can basically advertise at how good those agencies are. So I think, look, we saw this. There's been some news. What in the last 24 hours that Notre Dame is restructuring. It feels like putting its football
administrator up to chief operating officer, which is really interesting. Ron
Polis. I grabbed that one just because it's the most recent headline. Yeah. But I think we're seeing a restructuring underway that's going to emulate the front office of the NFL franchises a lot more.
Yeah,
and hopefully this ideology that Andy's talking about shifts where transparency isn't considered taboo. And honestly, it would help the schools more than it would help anyone else.
Yeah.
It would actually hurt the players.
Yeah, the schools need to understand that this is a legal way for them to actually lower prices.
Or they can keep overpaying.
Yeah.
So there's been a few people that have been on the record about this. I think, remember at the championship site, Dan Radakovich, the Miami AD, and a few other ADs went on the record about we should just have an uncapped market. But one of the things that Dan said, Dan's retiring now, which gives him sort of the ability to kind of say a little more publicly, but one of the things he said was we should have an uncapped market, but it's got to come with transparency. We have to all provide every number, the length of the deal,
and you can have money. Transparency in the same way the NFL does. It's no problem.
You can
do it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now They can't share amongst each other the way the NFL does because there's no CBA. But again, if you let all the true information get out, it will kind of regulate itself.
Andy, speaking of the NFL, speaking of NFL coaches, speaking of NFL coaches' photo every year at their annual gathering in the spring.
Oh, yes, sir.
We have something of the college version.
We have the college football version of that. And yes, I've been dying to break one of these. Ross is.
I'm on a roll. What can
I'm
I say?
Done. I'm done. When we come back, this is a tremendous photo of some of the bright shining lights in college football coaching, all in their golf gear. We'll break it all down for you when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and listen, the NFL folks have all the fun on their podcast because every year the NFL coaches take a photo at the owners' meetings that provides the best in unintentional comedy, and we just haven't ever gotten that in college football. Well, now we've got it. This region's golf tournament that all the coaches do, they had a group photo yesterday, and I think they took them all together because it was raining. And they had them all in the clubhouse. They canceled the thing because of bad weather. So it's a picture of some of the most famous coaches, active and retired, in college football in the rain.
Yeah, they have their rain jackets on.
So the facial expressions are classic. So where do we start, gentlemen? We've got a sitting U.S. senator in this group, in Tommy Tuberville. We've got Kirby Smart, Urban Meyer, and Mike Norvell right across the front with Houston Nutt just hanging out next to him.
Where can people find this photo, by the way? Because I'm sure they're going to want to look it up. I don't know.
It is on Twitter. And I'm sure producer TJ, by the way, if you're watching on yahoosports.tv, then you've already seen it. Or if you're on YouTube.
Yes, great. But if you're listening, go to Twitter and I don't know. Maybe we'll tweet it out at some point.
We'll find the photo for you.
We'll figure it out. It's pretty good.
Fantastic. Steve Spurrier. Now he's just enjoying being on the golf course. He doesn't usually do the great smile in photos anyways. This looks like Steve Spurrier in every photo. But Dabo Swinney looks super happy behind him.
Spurrier is just dissatisfied because he knows how much of a superior golfer he is compared to all of these a-holes.
Yeah, right. Spurrier is mad that this thing's been canceled. Yeah. Meanwhile, if you go back to the back, you've got Kyle Whittingham who's like, thank God this thing got canceled. Now I can get in a workout.
Scott Satterfield looks like he ate something extremely questionable and is rethinking his decisions. This is the happiest, and this is, we want to talk about grading on a scale. This is the happiest I've ever seen Pat Narduzzi look, which is not what I expected to say out loud. This is the RBF, this is the classic Brent Key RBF face, which is Brent Key looks like every angry 9-year-old Little League coach in one human being.
He's Brent Key is basically thinking, I could be drawing up a scoop block drill right now.
He is never not an offensive line coach. Like that switch is never off. He just looks like every dad who's leaving Lowe's at 9 a.m. on a Saturday because they didn't have the washer he needed. all the retired guys are happy.
All the retired guys look happy. Yeah.
SMU coach Rhett Lashley's I'm at a golf course, but I'm only surrounded by millionaires and I'm the SMU coach. So I'm used to being surrounded by billionaires when I play golf.
I like this, this little smirk thing that, his name is escaping me. The Georgia Tech, former Georgia Tech coach, Paul Johnson.
Paul Johnson's little smirk thing going on.
Yeah.
Well, that's because PJ just told a wildly inappropriate joke from the 1940s to the entire group before they said cheese.
Probably
Dan
so.
Lanning is so dead behind the eyes and so angry. This is the exact way that I look in pictures when I do holidays with my in-laws, because my sister-in-law is like a uber millennial and takes like 1,000 more photos than are necessary for like Instagram. This is the I'm tired of taking pictures eyes that Dan Lanning has.
Yes.
Love you, Kathy.
By the way, if in case you're wondering if Gus Malzahn is enjoying retirement, look at this photo. Yeah. That is a man at peace and content
for sure.
With everything that is going on in the world.
Recently moved back, I think, to Auburn with his wife. He's just relaxing, maybe helping the Tigers a little bit. How about Houston Nutt's get up? He's looking good, man. The hat. He's got the straw hat. And he's got the full rain suit, jumpsuit sort of looking thing.
Also,
Houston Nutt came prepared.
Notice the distance between Houston Nutt and Hugh Freeze, which is really weird because those guys have
opposite ends of the photo.
They have so much in common. They once shared a notice of allegations with each other. They're the only two coaches who have shared an NOA from the NCAA.
Well, but I mean, let's give the history here. Houston Nutt getting thrown under the bus, after being fired by Ole Miss.
Yeah, he had three level ones. Yeah.
Caused his attorney, Tom Mars, to request some phone records. Caused a pretty bad day for Hugh Freeze.
Which Freeze should thank him for now, because without that happening, he wouldn't have been able to steal all that money from Auburn. So if anybody Freeze should thank
him. Ole Miss. He didn't get any money from Ole Miss.
Freeze made a lot more money in the long term.
Do we know how this group was roped into this? I know it's a Peach Bowl golf outing. Randomly send out invitations. Because it's a weird group because it is a lot of retired guys. Then it's like a lot of power conference guys, and then Jeff Monken though is there randomly, and Tommy Tuberville and the senator is in there.
The three of us grew up in the South.
Yeah.
We know exactly how they got roped into this. The same way you get roped into anything as a Southerner. Free Chick-fil-A.
Also, yeah. I like that there's a sitting U.S. senator in this photo, and no one, because they're all ball coaches who have beat his ass, they give him zero respect, which is very, very Southern. Mike Norvell, as Andy pointed out in the break, covering his private parts. Is that a metaphor?
He looks like he's setting a pick.
Is that a metaphor?
So does the senator. The senator is covering the private parts as well.
Well, you know, it's spicy for elected officials these days. PJ Fleck, we haven't mentioned PJ. Very happy to be here.
Yeah, very happy. Yes, he's got the.
He's in a good mood. We had him on the show a couple weeks ago. He's just in a great mood. Like, I think PJ Fleck knows he's got a team that's going to win like 8-9 games, and
seems to always
they didn't
have that
to pay that much for it.
Win, yeah,
I feel like games. He stumbled around. I think he has stumbled across the right self-help book or podcast recently about accepting where you're at in life, and he's. Mm. I bet. I feel like he's embracing.
Oh,
the
he's
Minnesota
very zen about all of this.
Yeah.
Urban showing off what probably is an extraordinarily expensive watch on his left hand. I assume. Yes. I mean, it looks
on,
pretty nice.
I can't really tell. Not a Pepsi. That is a Submariner, but it's not a Pepsi.
Look at you.
But I can tell.
Are
by
you
the face.
Do you have this much knowledge of watches? Wow! Look at that, Andy.
It's funny.
I haven't worn a watch in maybe 15 years.
Godfrey, Mister Fight the System, Mister Eat the Rich, rocking a Rolly.
I never said I had. Hey. Whoa.
Yeah, he never said he didn't have taste.
Yes, correct. I never said I was anti-capitalist either.
Yeah,
I just said
right.
I believe in a fair market.
That's right. Yes.
Manny, you know, for someone with a broadcast background, Manny doesn't like, he's not doing sportscaster face there. I expect better from Manny.
But Manny wasn't a front of the camera guy.
Manny was behind the scenes guy
when he worked in
our
business.
I like his little vest jacket. That little zipper vest jacket.
Manny's style has been very impressive. Very now he's shaved a little bit. He had the kind of the playoff beard going, but he's let the hair grow out. Like Manny's got a look,
my guy,
and it's working.
Kirby, one of the most famous people in one of the most popular sports in North America, still does not know how to take a picture. God bless him. God bless him. He's still just like, he looks like the guys at like the Methodist Breakfast Club, and he's like, did it go off?
But here's the thing, though. If we had to guess who's busting chops the most in this
Paul
group,
Kirby, probably.
Paul it is Kirby and Steve Spurrier.
Kirby, yeah.
Paul Johnson,
yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And Paul's
a good one, too. Yeah, Paul's a good one.
Ask Lane Kiffin about Paul Johnson.
But Kirby is roasting every single one of these dudes.
Oh, yeah.
The entire day.
Yeah. That, you know what that is? Part of that, too, is being a short defensive back. Like that just it's hardwired into Kirby from his playing days. I feel like that you got to talk a little mess.
But who's the only all-SEC player in this group? Kirby Smart. He kicked their asses. He knows he kicked their asses.
What about OBC?
Was he all-SEC? He was the highest.
I don't know.
So, yeah. We'll give him that. We'll give him that. So, yes, both of them. But Kirby,
Shane Beamer has not aged. He looks exactly like he did.
He looks like a kid in this photo, especially with all these older, especially retired guys. Like he looks so young in this photo.
When I was in college, starting off in the job, Tony Barnhart took me to dinner. Tony Barnhart was a fraternity brother of my dad's, and Shane walked up and he was like a brand new assistant at Mississippi State, maybe, and like introduced himself to me as if I was anybody worth introducing to. And he looks exactly the same as he did at Chula Steakhouse in 2004.
So, let me ask you this:
Yeah,
who would you enjoy spending 18 holes
golfing with
of this group?
Can I ask a dumb question? So I don't golf. I've never golfed. Is it a foursome that you would go with? So I have to pick three?
Or you pick three?
Let's pick three.
Oh,
let's
pick
your
three.
Dream foursome out of this.
Oh, in this crew?
Yeah.
Well, let's each pick one, and that'll give us three.
Perfect. All right.
Okay. What's our top pick? I mean, it's hard not to pick Spurrier for me. Like, it's really hard not to pick Steve Spurrier.
Yeah, he's going to be on your ass the entire time, so be aware of that.
For highly
also, he's going to be really good. He's going to beat you, I'm sure, by eight strokes at least.
The funniest thing would be to take PJ and Spurrier with Freeze and just have them make fun of Hugh the entire time we're on the course.
You know they would, too.
Believe me, that's what I'm saying.
Are you taking Paul Johnson or you want me to take Paul Johnson?
I'm taking Paul Johnson.
All right, so I gotta come up with the last
Spurrier,
one.
Paul Johnson, and
it's got to be Kirby.
Yeah,
because Kirby's good. The only one who will go back at Spurrier and Paul Johnson.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. Who's the best golfer in the group? Is it Spurrier?
OBC?
I don't know. It's, well, Trey Lamb's not there.
Yeah, he's
Trey Lamb is not there.
He would definitely be the best.
He's the best golfer among active coaches.
I mean, Hugh, I mean, I hate to say, I mean,
Hugh is.
Hugh plays a lot of golf.
Wait, so he must, hey, I've got his stats. Hang on. I can tell you.
Oh, God.
I knew Godfrey would like that one, but he does. He plays a lot of golf. He probably is, I'm guessing.
Plays under multiple names, too. I have no idea about.
Saban's on this picture. He shot an 81 at Augusta, he said recently.
Sure. Sure, he said. Mac, we haven't talked about Mac. Mac's in the back probably telling really long stories.
And Witt,
I actually wouldn't mind Mac either. Whittingham, by the way, because Mac would add some class to the foursome.
Yeah, he would. Yeah. Oh, very much so. Yeah, the there classiest guys, group would be. Yeah,
yeah. There are guys and, here that I know that I don't want to like Monk's a great dude, but if I'm having a golf, I want two a holes and someone we're making fun of the entire time. And Monk is way too like Monkin and Doran.
Yeah, that's the other part.
Like, they're too nice
but
for
if,
that.
If we replace Kirby with Mac. Like Spurrier and PJ are not going to kill Mac.
How about that? How about
they're
all
like
this
Mac? No, they're going to be nice to Mac.
Yeah. How about this three? How about Houston, the Senator, and Hugh Freeze?
And Hugh Freeze.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Let's do it.
6 degrees of Auburn.
That would be amazing.
Really, what you need in that group is Petrino. Well, and no, then they can Houston, all the talk about
Houston, the Senator, and Hugh Freeze are all ex Ole Miss head coaches.
Hmm. I'd golf with that. Oh, hey,
right.
Andy, there's one beef we haven't mentioned. You got Grandpa Mac Brown up there and Dave Doran. You think they squashed it? You think they squashed it?
Maybe.
True. I bet Dave Doran's loving the fact that he's like, I put your ass in retirement. I guarantee you he's still doing that shit. Yeah.
And he might do the same thing to Bill Belichick.
We haven't even talked about Narduzzi, by the way, in this group, because he would be a hell of an 18 holes with Narduzzi. You would come away with a lot of stories.
How many
clubs
is he breaking?
You would get a lot of unfiltered opinions.
How many clubs is he breaking in 18 holes?
Yeah, yeah. Over-under is 2.5. Yeah.
Dream college football golf foursome. Yeah, I think we got it. I think we got it with Spurrier, Paul Johnson, and Kirby Smart. I am all for that. Let's make it happen.
I want to know what Shane Beamer's doing. Like, drop the skincare regimen, bro.
He looks
how
fantastic.
Many times a day are we moisturizing?
Especially surrounded by that crew. I mean, he looks like he's 38. It's
Turns
crazy.
Out white doesn't crack.
When we come back on Tuesday, Shane Beamer skincare. Of course.
I'll text him.
We'll find out. We'll get the information you need. What do you need to know about private equity? What do you need to know about Shane Beamer's skincare regimen? We got it all here at the College Football Inquirer. Talk to you Tuesday.